All right, so we are here on In the Meantime on NMB Combatant Radio, talking to Scott Kellogg from the Rhizome Collective out of Austin. And my name is DJ Sweetie, and we're going to be talking for about 20 minutes. We'll do a little bit of a break, come back, talk for maybe another 20 minutes or so, and then we'll take another musical break here. So, hey, Scott, how's it going today?
Pretty good, thanks.
Okay. Let me see. Why don't you tell us what the Rhizome Collective is, just really briefly, and then why you joined it or why you founded it, depending on your role.
Okay. The Rhizome Collective is a nonprofit organization here in Austin, Texas. It's been around since the year 2000. We own a warehouse over on the east side of Austin, which out of which we conduct what we call a Center for Community Organizing and Center for Urban Sustainability Education. And I've been there since the beginning of the organization for about for the whole 4.5 years now or so. It's really been my life and my passion for that whole time.
Nice. All right, and let's see. Why don't you tell us how many folks are part of the collective and let's see what you find yourself, your main focus, yourself.
Right. And there's about 12 people that are part of the organization itself. I mean, our we have a much larger base of community support, but there's about 12 people who are actually members of the collective. Us as a group, we're a consensus-run organization, which means we all agree on the decisions made, which contrasts with voting, where you have a majority rule system, and it takes longer to reach a decision, but, you know, the payoff is that things move through a lot more efficiently once everybody does agree on it. You don't have half the group dragging their feet on the issue. My personal role, I've been involved with a lot of different aspects of the whole program. I personally have been the director of the sustainability program, which includes having designed a number of the sustainability features we have here and organizing tours and educational groups working with school kids on these issues. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see. You basically said you work with consensus. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you decided to work with consensus versus a voting process?
It was decision that we made really on at the beginning that that we would do that. I've always been personally, well, not always, but in my adult life, been committed to the consensus process. It's something I feel strongly about. It involves a lot of trust and a lot of patience, a lot of willingness to work with people and a willingness to communicate with them and desire to work out your problems and your differences with people, and not to be so stuck on something being a particular way or a certain way, but a willingness to, you know, to talk about it with people, about your ideas, about your proposals, and come to a point where everyone is reasonably pleased with the decision. At that point, we would consent on the proposal being made, and it would happen at that point. We operate on a process where a collective member has the ability to block consensus, which it only requires one person to block the proposal being made, and then it will not be allowed to go through. That power is rarely exercised in our organization. If a person, it works well in a lot of ways, because if a person finds himself frequently blocking consensus, then that is an indication to them that perhaps their ideals are at odds with those of the organization, and that it may not be the best organization for them to be part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a process for bringing new people into the collective, or do you just kind of, is it pretty open?
It's definitely a process where a person would propose for membership, and they would basically be expected to to be taking part in our activities and our organizations, and just for to give us a chance to get to know who they are and be certain that our ideals are in line with our own. And then we usually have a 6-month trial period, for at which point that person could officially propose to be a collective member, and then we would decide whether or not to accept them.
Right. And have you had, how do you kind of divide up which direction your organization is going to go in? Like, how are you going to, you said you've got four kind of main parts to it. Did you always have four main parts? Was that the kind of the idea from the beginning, or was that kind of an evolution?
Yeah, that's definitely been an evolution. We definitely begun with just the space itself, which we purchased. We own this building. We bought in 2000.
Cool.
And initially, a lot of the work was just making this space usable for anything. It was just a burnt out shell of a warehouse, a lot of fire damage, a lot of leaks. We just had to do a lot of work and just bringing it up to a level where anybody can function out of here. But the idea all along, at least, was to be of some kind of service, to be of some kind of an asset to this local community, and to provide space for activist organizations, low rent space, space for organizations to do the work out of, where they are not constantly struggling to make rent just to be able to continue their work, that they can put their energies more into the work they do and not into having to pay rent on the space. To provide also a space for organizations to come and have fundraisers and events to be able to raise money for the work that they're doing. And in addition to that, the Center for Urban Sustainability, the idea is kind of to have a number of displays of environmental ecological technologies on site, things which would give people the ability to have more control over the basic means of survival when pertaining to water, food production, waste management, energy production, shelter, and to be able to have this in the same space where people are coming to use the to work with the different organizations that work out of the space creates a really vital cross-section that we feel and sort of complements our underlying philosophy of what we call dual power, which is to be working to change the things in society that we don't like, to be working to change the world as much as we can, while simultaneously building a model of the world which we would like to live in the right now.
Right. That's great. I think that's of interest to a lot of people. And I think to some people that might seem like a contradiction, that you've got a kind of, you know, a crisis situation all the time with, you know, our myriad kind of problems in the world. And, you know, I'm sure in Austin and San Francisco. And then at the same time, how do you project kind of a more positive vision of the world that you want to move towards? Does it feel like a contradiction to you sometimes that like one thing is too difficult, if we could just kind of go ahead and make this decision and we can, you know, get this project done, or does it feel like there's a good balance back and forth?
Yeah, it definitely feels like there's a balance. I mean, to me, it's really two sides of a coin that when we are involved in activist projects, when we are involved in direct action or on the front lines, that for every no, we have a yes to back it up. Mm-hmm. And I think that gives a lot of strength to the things that we are saying. When we go up against something that we don't like and we do criticize it, and for us to be able to say, here's something better, here's something which we prefer, is really powerful. Because so often you have a lot of people who, well, they know everything that they're opposed to. They know everything that they're against. But then, you know, people say to them, well, okay, great, well, what do you want instead? And they don't really have an answer, or they might have some idea, but it's not really well defined. So I think it adds a lot of strength and credibility to activist work. And on the same hand, there's people who, all kinds of people who are building utopian visions, but don't really have much of a critique of the world that we live in today, beyond they know that there's something wrong with it, but they can't exactly put their finger on it, and they're then likely to repeat a lot of the mistakes that were made in the culture and the society which they came from, and in their visions of utopian society, you know, particularly with, you know, people in the sustainability movement. I mean, you can't really talk about sustainability without looking at the factors, the global economic factors, which cause it to be impossible for so many people to live sustainably any longer. That it's really important to have a well-developed critique of those systems to know why you're doing what you're doing. It's like, okay, we're doing organic gardening, but, well, why? You know, what's wrong with conventional agriculture? What's wrong with, you know, free trade and NAFTA and FTA that makes it, you know, that doing organic agriculture would be such, you know, a viable alternative to that, or an important alternative to that.
Right. Do you find that comes up when you're doing outreach, when you're doing kind of your urban sustainability education or the after-school program or something like that? Do people ask you about how, I mean, do they look, okay, who's your director or who is your, you know, I mean, do they ever get confused about the fact that you're a collective, or does that not even really come into their mind?
We usually try and make it pretty clear from the beginning that we're collective, that this is not the work of any one particular person, but this has been a synthesis of many people's ideas and energies and visions all together, and that, you know, we're part of a community at large. I mean, just even with the organizations that work out of our space, they're part of us, but each of them has a separate relationship with us. I mean, I'll go through who they are, basically.
Yeah, great. Great.
There's an organization called Inside Books that works out of here, who's a group that sends books to prisoners, to persons incarcerated in the state of Texas. There's an organization called Bikes Across Borders, which receive bicycles and them down to folks in Mexico and Cuba. There's an organization called Food Not Bombs, which receives donations from restaurants and supermarkets of food that's perhaps slightly past sell-by date or is about to be thrown away, and prepare meals out of it to be served to the public. We also have an organization called the Independent Media Center, which maintains a website and presents views on news topics that you wouldn't necessarily be hearing about in mainstream media. And each of those organizations, I mean, they each contain a number of people in themselves, and they have a different relationship with us. Some of them are more or less autonomous, but some of them, like in the case of Bikes Across Borders, is actually part of the Rhizome Collective. So
the Rhizome Collective owns the warehouse, and it's also the Center for Community Organizing, or is that a separate offshoot, basically?
Yeah, both of those things happen in the same location at this warehouse. We've been working to fix the building itself and creating little partitions and spaces in it that these different organizations are able to work of. And on the site itself, we've made it into this urban sustainability teaching model, where, for instance, one of the first things that we did when we got the place was tear up the asphalt parking lot that was in the front of the building, and have now turned that into our gardens, the main gardens, carried out all the asphalt, and have been bringing in truckloads of wood mulch to spread across it that have broken down into soil, and have demonstrations of rainwater harvesting and aquaculture, plant production, constructed wetlands for wastewater treatment, solar, wind energy, raising chickens, producing methane gas for cooking, biofuels, biodiesel, all sort of variety of things like that.
Wow, there's a lot of stuff going on over at
that
one space.
Yeah, there really is.
So how many people do you have coming in, you know, in one day through the warehouse, would you say?
It really depends on what's going on. Like on Tuesdays and Thursdays, like tonight, for instance, is a volunteer night for Bikes Across Borders, so they bring in a lot of people in just for that. And Thursdays is a really big night because we have Bikes Across Borders, and Inside Books has their night, and Food Not Bombs actually serves a meal that night too. So, you know, we can have some nights where we'll have, you know, 30 or 40 people, or if there's an event, we have a lot of events. We do a lot of film screenings. that Independent Media Center puts on that will attract large crowds for those as well.
Right. Do you do outreach to people, or do you find that new volunteers and new members of your collective come in through those public events?
Yeah, we definitely bring a lot of people in. We maintain a pretty big listserv, which we send out announcements about workshops and events and attract a lot of people in. And just, you know, we've been trying to get a lot of media attention lately. One of our newest projects, I guess I'll elaborate, aside from maintaining the Center for Community Organizing and the Center for Urban Sustainability Education, we've have a new project now where we've been donated a 10-acre piece of land. It's a former landfill that was closed in 1970 that currently has about 2 acres of illegally dumped construction debris just spread across of it. And over the summer as well, we got a grant from the EPA to clean up all that debris on it and basically the idea is instead of to be taking all that stuff to another landfill somewhere else, to be recycling as much of it as possible. And if that's, you know, just recycling the metal, there's tons of metal scrap on the property where that's actually going to be taken to a metal recycling place. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the stuff like tires and concrete, we're actually going to keep on site and reuse them to build foundations for structures on the site in the future.
Wow.
But we definitely, we've gotten a lot of media attention about that. And so that's brought in a lot of people to our organization. And as part of the grant, we have two of our members going door-to-door in that neighborhood, talking to the local people there, and just letting them know what we're about and what we're doing. That's definitely probably been one of the biggest struggles is really to be doing outreach to the local community. We live in East Austin, which is probably more than 95% Latino neighborhood, and just really trying to do outreach with this community and try and be serving as an asset to them somehow, and at the same time trying to be really mindful of the impact that we have as a primarily white, we're not entirely white organization, and the effect that we can have on contributing to gentrification and the displacement of the people who live in these neighborhoods, and really trying to be conscious of that and be working counter to that at the same time.
Right. Well, that's great. This is you're listening to Enemy Combatant Radio. Just want to remind our listeners, and this is called the show is called In the Meantime. I'm talking to Scott Kellogg from the Rhizome Collective in Austin, Texas. Urban permaculture and sustainability. And I wanted to take a little bit of a break here, play a little bit of music, and then I'll come back and we'll just give Scott a little break here and we'll come back.